breezing our way through a beautiful Arizona Saturday morning with Rosie on the house. Welcome. We show up every Saturday morning and have for 30 years with one goal in mind, to become every Arizona homeowner's best friend by providing free information about anything having to do with your house, home, castle, or cabin. In the 8 o'clock hour, it's always the landscape gardening, irrigation, tree trimming, lawn mowing segment. We've got John J. Harper in here joining us this morning, and we've got Jason calling in from Sun City. If you've got a landscape or gardening question you'd like to talk to John J., we do have an open line at 1-888-767-4348. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, folks. Thank you for having me on your show this morning.
You betcha. What you trying to tackle?
So I've got about 7-foot-tall oleanders in the front yard that I am wanting to cut down to about a foot. Didn't know if now is the right time to do it, or if I should kind of put a shade structure over it after I cut it down so it doesn't get sunburnt too bad.
No, they're oleanders.
Don't feel sorry for them at all.
I wouldn't, you know, normally encourage somebody to trim them this time of year because they're in full bloom more than likely. For sake of, you know, losing the flowers, but it sounds like you're doing this for a reason, to cut them that low. You certainly can do it this time of year, and you don't need to take any kind of measures like shading or protecting. They'll be fine.
Well, perfect. Thank you so much for the call.
You're welcome.
Whittle a 7-foot oleander down to a foot, and she'll be back to being a 7-foot oleander in about 2 years.
You know, I think we've mentioned this, but we've gone out on insurance estimates where a house has burned and the oleanders have been part of the
singed
fire. Burnt, you know, people thought they were burnt to the ground. By the time we got the appointment and I got there, they were starting to grow back. So you can literally burn them to the ground. You can't kill them.
In our remodeling, when we have a row of oleanders that are in the way of what we want to do, we generally just call in the Air Force.
Yeah, right.
Airstrike. Could you napalm this particular lot right here?
Yeah.
But it takes a backhoe.
Yeah.
And it takes over excavation, the root ball plus 2 or 3 more feet. Then we recompact and put it all back in by layers. And
yeah, it's a chore. There's a reason they're hardy.
Now, are they poisonous?
Yes. The sap from oleander is poisonous. It takes, I don't know how much it takes. I am not always the smartest person in the world, but I have actually tasted it, put it in my mouth. It is the most awful, nasty thing. I'm not encouraging anybody to do it, but I can't imagine.
Do not try this at home.
Eating enough of it to get poisoned by it. And that's usually not how it happens. It usually happens because it gets mixed in with something. People with horses that throw hay on the ground feed on the ground, and oleander leaves were on the so they ate it with the hay. They won't go, horses as dumb as they are won't go over and just start eating on oleander if it's up, you know, a hedge of oleanders there. It's just awful, nasty stuff. But they're poisonous, but unless I'm missing something, I haven't seen any cases of anybody getting poisoned by them in recent memory.
They're planted for privacy screens,
typically.
Shade screens. What would be a good alternative to oleander?
Sour orange is a great alternative. The full-sized orange and yellow bells are great alternatives to that. Even small trees like mastic make a great, thick, full type hedge that can be sheared and kept that way. So, you know, there's some good ones, but it's hard to replace them in certain situations if you need something that's fast-growing, tough, doesn't need a lot of water, and if you've got the space and room, you know, and they're beautiful right now. I mean, you drive around, and they're just fabulous.
I want to get to Lee, who's calling from Phoenix, but I want one more question on oleanders. First, will a dwarf oleander really stay dwarf?
Absolutely.
They do.
So dwarf typically means it's about half the size of a full-grown one, and most dwarf oleanders are that or less. But still doesn't mean they're going to stay 2 or 3 feet tall.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're 5 or 6
yeah.
feet.
Yeah.
So, but way more compact than a full size.
It's nothing for an oleander after years to be 15, 20 feet high.
Oh, no, yeah, no, or 25 or 30.
Yeah, massive. All right, let's get back to the phones. We've got Lee, we've got Ken, we've got Naomi, but Lee's up first calling from Phoenix. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning. I had a question about clover as ground cover. I've got a couple of ash trees in my backyard that are on the west side, and that ground under them is in shade most of the day. And so I'm curious if clover is a good idea.
Well, you could try clover. Dichondra is another one. Looks a little bit like clover, round-leafed little ground cover. That would work well. You may have to do a little experimenting, but those are the types of things you're going to have to get to grow in that shady area for sure.
Now, when I read Popular Mechanics in the back on one of those little ads, they sell shade-tolerant grass.
Right. Well,
what's your opinion of those?
The problem with most of those quote-unquote shade-tolerant grasses is they are cool-season grasses. They're a bluegrass, fescue, ryegrass blend type thing. They'll do marvelously here until about July.
Yeah, okay.
And then the nights, when our nights quit cooling off, you're going to have some problems. Fescue by itself is probably the most heat-tolerant of those. Can be grown with some success, but you want to do it now. Don't wait till it gets hot to do it.
And the Arizona ash is a pretty big canopy tree, so he's dealing with probably a pretty good area of dirt.
And remember the other part of the fact that they're also, it's shade for sure, but you also have a big tree competing for water and nutrients around the base and underneath it. So you generally have to water a little more and fertilize a little more frequently to have a good stand of grass or ground cover underneath a big, competitive, vigorous tree like that.
There you go. Lee, we appreciate the call. Let's see if we can sneak Ken in from Mesa real quick. Good morning, Ken. Welcome to Rosie on the House.
Good morning. I've got a couple of 15, 20-foot Italian cypress that have turned gray over the years, and just wondering if I'm not feeding them right or if I've got some disease.
My guess is you've got probably mites, spider mites or mites on them that make them have that gray, dusty appearance to them. Take a sheet of paper, white or yellow legal pad paper over there, and take some of that plant and bend it over and kind of tap it against that paper, and then wait just a second, and you'll probably see the head of a pin or smaller little dots start moving around. If that's the case, then you need to treat it. It's an insect, so you'll need to treat it accordingly.
Would you recommend an insecticide for that?
Spinosad works pretty darn well on mites. Also, just good, strong, high pressure. Get the dirt and dust out of those cypress. Those mites travel around and are transported on dust particles. So keep it clean. Keep it washed down once in a while. We haven't had enough rain to do that, unfortunately. And then treat it with something like spinosad. Make sure you read the labels. Make sure it lists spider mites or red spotted mites or something like that on the label.
Thank you.
Now that's plant care even Rosie can do. Power wash your Italian cypress.
Actually, a power washer would work very well.
That's what I'm talking about, man. And it can be so spider mite infested that it changes the actual color of the tree?
Absolutely. And one thing you might actually be seeing is some webbing from a distance. They can be so bad, there's webbing there. But they certainly, they're sucking enough chlorophyll out of the plant that it just changes it to a gray and then eventually brown if you let it go too long.
Did you happen to hear the show last week? You were probably
no,
on the road,
I
weren't
did
you?
Not, I was.
Where we brought in the arborist talking about a book called The Tree Whisperer, a German author who talks about the feelings of trees and how they communicate to each other.
I did miss that.
It was one of the most fascinating conversations. I thought when I saw the title of the book, I thought, ooh, this will be real woo-woo. but there are trees that when a particular bug attacks the bark, it starts emitting, they've detected a particular phenome that attracts a particular wasp that lays its eggs inside that worm, and when the eggs hatch, it eats the worm, the tree recovers. In Africa, there's an acacia tree that the giraffes like to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And as the tree is being chewed on by a giraffe, it emits an odor where all the acacia trees downwind then start producing and sending tannins to the leaves, which the giraffes don't like. So you always see giraffes feeding upwind.
Wow. I had no idea on that. I did know that the pheromone, yeah, whatever it is that that they do. Obviously, when it, especially a weakened plant, will obviously there's, because you'll go to a row of plants and there's one plant just getting murdered.
Right. It's like the other plants are teamed up on
it's
it.
It's like, okay, how come you're just picking on that guy? You know, so there's obviously something going on.
It was absolutely incredible, and they're now measuring micro amperages between the root feeding signal systems where the trees are communicating electromagnetically through the root balls. I mean, and the fungus that grows on the ends of the root tips now are communicating to other trees as to whether that tree's in distress or not.
It's a whole new world out there, isn't there?
Man.
That's pretty wild
stuff. Who'd have thunk that, yeah, right? Well, we're not here just to answer Rosie's curiosity. We're here to answer your questions as well at 1-888-767-4348. Miss Naomi, I'm going to ask you to just hold on a couple minutes here, and we'll be getting to you right after just a short little break here. I want to break away here just for a minute to Romy, who's out on a remote broadcast at Habitat for Humanity, wanting to talk about his landscaping projects and products.
Well, I tell you what, I got my landscape project figured out for this weekend. There is no less than 80 Adirondack chairs that are solid wood for less than $40, $37. I'm bringing two of these home, and I've got all the blooms. The leaves are out on my mulberry tree, and I'm going to have me a nice power nap on the lawn under my mulberry tree in this new Adirondack chair. That's my landscape project for this weekend. And that's going to be bug-free, because just last night we were walking around the orchard and the garden, and those nasty little bugs started coming back. So we hooked up our Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew to our hose sprayer, gave it all a nice power wash. It kills on contact, and it's so organic and safe. You can actually harvest. You can put it right on your edibles and eat the produce the same day you apply. The oils on it to coat and smother and kill the insects. We're talking on trees, right on vegetables. You can use it in flower garden shrubs. Wherever you've got a bug problem, Bonide products that are family made in America have a line called Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew that'll help keep you insect free, and it'll repel for up to 30 days. You can find Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew all over the great state of Arizona, including Christopher's Garden Center in Lakeside.